Lutheran Public Radio is now a nonprofit organization. That means all past, present, and future gifts to LPR are tax deductible. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate by check, make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio, and mail it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a tax-deductible gift online, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. For the next half hour of the program, along with much of the Reformation Church, we are remembering Philip Melanchthon. The name might sound unfamiliar to you. He is, in fact, one of the principal authors of much of the Lutheran Confessions, a major contributor to the Lutheran Confessions in their thought, in himself, lifelong companion of Luther. I think they were probably next-door neighbors or backyard neighbors as well, an influence on Luther, as well as Luther's influence on him. And he's remembered by the German people as the father of their educational system, which is no mean feat in itself. He was heralded recently as one of the greatest humanists ever to have lived. That is old-style humanist, not secular humanist. Philip Melanchthon, 16th-century reformer and lay theologian. The church remembers him on this Monday, February the 16th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Martin Noland is a regular guest past director of the Concordia Historical Institute. Marty, welcome back.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, we're celebrating his birth on this day. Reformer Philip Melanchthon, what's the biggest myth that attaches to him?
I think the biggest myth, at least the one I've heard most frequently, is that Philip was somehow a, quote, crypto-Calvinist. In other words, that he had leanings toward Calvin's doctrine of the Lord's Supper. And this is not true. If, for example, people would look at the tapered edition of the Book of Concord, in the Formula of Concord section under Article 7, it lists at the very beginning in a footnote the crypto-Calvinist professors of theology that were supporting a more or less a Calvinist doctrine of the Lord's Supper. And if you look at the writing that came out, the first writing that produced this was in 1571. Melanchthon died in 1560. It was 11 years after his death that this problem of crypto-Calvinism first arose. He had problems, and perhaps we can discuss that today, but I don't think it's fair to accuse him of being a crypto-Calvinist.
Give us a brief biography of this man, Philip Melanchthon.
Melanchthon was born in 1497, so he was about 14 years the junior of Martin Luther. He received his bachelor degree at Heidelberg, his master's degree at Tübingen, and then in 1518, which was a year after the 95 Theses, he was appointed professor of Greek at the University of Wittenberg. And immediately he and Luther became very good friends, and Luther often consulted him in those early days simply in the attempt to improve his understanding of the Greek, because Philip is kind of like Mozart. He was a prodigy as a young man in the Greek language especially. And so he was very useful to Luther both in the church trial days and in the days of reform. He became the author of a book that's translated in English known as the Loci Communes. It's the first Protestant dogmatic work. And then the next significant thing that he published was the Augsburg Confession in 1530. And he was not the sole author of that, but he was the person responsible. He was the person presiding at Luther's death at the funeral in the Castle Church in 1546. And a year later, the Lutherans ended up in a difficult situation because Charles V and the Catholic armies had defeated the Saxon princes and installed a Catholic prince. And this went on for about 7 years, in which Melanchthon was the acknowledged head of the, or at least the theological head of the church, and yet he had a Catholic bishop. And this was at the end of his career. It embittered his life. He made some really foolish mistakes, and maybe we can talk about some of that in more detail. And then he passed away in 1560. So that's a brief summary of his life. He spent most all of his career as a professor at the University of Wittenberg.
How did he come to be the principal author of the not only the seminal, but also really in some ways the primary document of the Lutheran Confessions, the Augsburg Confession?
He was understood in those days, this is the 1520s, in the 1530s, to be the right-hand man of Martin Luther. And Luther was under the ban after the Edict of Worms. As you may remember, he was exiled to the Wartburg for a while, and that's where his prince, Frederick the Wise, would have liked to keep him. But Luther dared the devil and decided to go back to Wittenberg. But Luther was not safe anywhere outside of the Saxon lands under the control of his prince. And since the Diet of Augsburg, which was a governmental parliament of the German estates, was held in Augsburg, this was under Catholic territory. Luther could not go. He could not be involved in negotiations. Although Luther participated by letter, they needed somebody with his skills. And Philip was number two, and that's why he ended up becoming the major draftsperson of the Augsburg Confession.
Let's talk a bit about the relationship between Luther and Philip Melanchthon. Were they, in fact, neighbors?
Down the block. You can go to Wittenberg today, and it's very nice now that the wall is down. Now it's been, I believe, 20 years. Wittenberg is a major place. Anybody that is a Lutheran that is going to go to Germany really needs to visit there. And Luther's home was the old Augustinian cloister, which would be at the, that would be at the far east end of Wittenberg, the old town. And Melanchthon's home was probably five houses to the west of that. But it was all in what they would consider the university precinct of Wittenberg. You know, they were drinking buddies, if you want to say that. Luther talks about how the Reformation happened while he and Amsdorf and Philip were drinking beer. And that's not to be understood that they were drunkards, but Germans drink beer. It's a regular beverage. So, after their classes were over, between Vesper services and stuff, Luther and Melanchthon would often show up at each other's house and discuss theology. And their families knew each other. So, yes, they were close neighbors and very good friends.
He is, when I was in Germany a couple of years ago, Melanchthon is remembered almost exclusively, not as a reformer or even a Lutheran per se, but as the father of classical education and as one of the greatest humanists, not secular humanists, but humanists to have ever graced the German people. Tell us a bit about Melanchthon the Humanist.
Melanchthon the Humanist begins during his career as a student. His uncle or great-uncle was a very famous humanist named Reuchlin. Johannes Reuchlin, I see here, yeah, it was his great-uncle. And Reuchlin was kind of like a mentor. He wasn't actually his teacher, but he advised Melanchthon on what he needed to take while he was going through high school and college. So by the time that Melanchthon was done, he had a full command of all the best sources and tools that were at the disposal of the humanists of the day. When Erasmus came out with his New Testament, it was about the time that Melanchthon was beginning his career, and this became like his, you could probably see Melanchthon walking around town with the Erasmus's New Testament in his left hand, like you often see pastors at conferences carrying their Greek Testament around. He was at the forefront of initiating this type of humanism, which is not the secular humanism, as you noted earlier, we have today. It was the concern to dig into and understand the ancient church and also the ancient world, specifically the Latin and classical literature that was available to the people at the time. So he became, this became his field, not just a teacher of Greek, but he wanted to make this what an educated man in Germany was all about. An educated man would be somebody that could talk to another educated man about Plato or Aristotle, and when they were talking about, let's say, what's the best way to do government, or what's justice, that they would have a common language and a common source of ideas to discuss these with. And this was the whole humanist program, and after a couple of years of being professor at Wittenberg, in the year, let's see, it's 1524.
About 25 seconds, please.
Okay, he became the rector, that would be like the dean of the liberal arts department. And from that position, he proceeded to reform the University of Wittenberg, which became a model for all the Lutheran universities in Germany.
When we come back from this break, we'll talk a little bit more about his influence, both theologically, educationally. I think he's called instructor or teacher or professor of Germany by the German people. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that. And then after Luther's death, Philip Melanchthon's theology begins to migrate. Dr. Nolan said early on that he's not accurately called a crypto-Calvinist, but he wanted so badly to have some kind of detente with the Calvinist wing of the Reformation that many became deeply concerned about his theology. That work that he wrote early in his career, Loci Communis, Common Places, that Luther once called next to the New Testament, also changed with Melanchthon's theology. We'll talk about that theological migration when we come back. Stay tuned. We're remembering Philip Melanchthon on this Monday, February the 16th. This is Issues Etc.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastors or lay leaders to hold a seminar in your area. Go to theclcc.org.
Here's a new way to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. You can now donate stocks, bonds, and mutual funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, contact Craig at 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Please consider donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds to Issues Etc. in 2009. Call Craig today, 618-223-8382. Thanks for your support.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Pro-life leader Dr. Lawrence White on why you should support Issues Etc.
In a culture that has forgotten about the truth of God, God's people need to stand upon His Word firmly and faithfully. Issues Etc. raises the questions that are in discussion in our society and in our church today, in a way that highlights the truth of God amid all the error and the falsehood of men. This is a program that is making a difference in our society, in our church, in our culture, to the glory of the Lord Jesus Christ.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Defending life from beginning to end. Issues, etc. Thanks for your support.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, etc. Dr. Martin Noland is our guest. We're talking about 16th century reformer, lay theologian, Philip Melanchthon. The church remembers his birthday on this day. Dr. Noland, he was called, just to pick up on the humanist angle we were talking about before, he was called or is called the preceptor of Germany. What does that mean?
Well, it means kind of like the main teacher, because the way that he set up the university curriculum and the goals of university education in Germany, everybody up until, well, the time of the Enlightenment, which would be in the 18th century in Germany, his goal for what the university man was to be and what was to be taught, that was what they were following. So he really was, in that sense, the master teacher of all of Germany.
After Luther's death, what becomes of Philip Melanchthon?
Melanchthon ends up in the very unfortunate circumstance of not having a prince watching his six, as we would say today. John Frederick the Magnanimous, who was the prince of Saxony at the time of Luther's death, after Luther died, Charles V came up from the south and challenged Frederick and Philip of Hesse and those in the Smalcald League, and they lost the battle. So what happened was that Charles, the emperor, deposed the Lutheran princes, especially those two, Philip and John the Frederick, went to jail for, five to 7 years. And the emperor took their title and their lands and bestowed them on another Catholic prince named Maurice of Saxony. And he also had some claims being their cousin. But the result was that suddenly in 1547, Melanchthon is the theological head of the Lutheran Church, but he has no support of a prince. In fact, he has a prince that is in cahoots with a Catholic emperor and with the Pope. This puts a lot of pressure on him. He looks what happened to John the Frederick and thinks, oh, I could be there in jail. Worse than that, the Pope had just advocated and approved using the methods of the Spanish Inquisition for anybody that was declared a heretic. This put Melanchthon in a very difficult situation, and anybody that has never been in such a situation of giving up pretty much everything that you hold dear for the sake of the faith, it's not fair to criticize unless you've been there. But this is what he did, and the Catholic prince, Maurice of Saxony, in conjunction with Charles V, invoked a law called the Augsburg Interim, and basically it just rolled back the Lutheran Reformation. And over a course of time, it would have been the end of the Lutheran Church. Philip Melanchthon publicly came out in favor of this, but privately, he was writing to his friends and saying, I don't agree with this. And this became known, and he became a traitor to both sides. And in a very difficult situation at the same time that the Lutheran princes were in prison and suffering for their faith. This was... this Augsburg Interim became the basis of Charles V taking over states in southern Germany, which is why Bavaria is Catholic today. And then he was pressing on Saxony, and Melanchthon and several of the other theologians made a modified statement known as the Leipzig Interim, which said a couple of things would have to wait to the council, but it's still pretty much allowed for the rolling back of the Lutheran Church. This finally came to an end in 1551 when Moritz of Saxony looked around and saw many of the other princes, not the Saxons, but like the Brandenburgs and the Prussians, starting to stand up to Charles. And in secret negotiations, Moritz became a Lutheran and turned around with the assistance of the King of France, which your Calvinist friends would appreciate. And they conquered Charles V and sent him south into Italy. And at that point, in 1552, the Lutherans became a legitimate Lutheran church. Melanchthon, though, by this time was totally disgraced because he had sold out to the Catholic cause. And this is a very important thing to understand. That's why he has a bad reputation among many Lutherans.
There is, you had mentioned before, his work that Luther extolled as next to the New Testament, Loci Communis Commonplaces. It's a theological work, not very long, and Luther greatly appreciated its first edition. Is it true that Melanchthon continued to revise and amend this work on into his life, that in the end it reflected a theology considerably different than that of expressed at first or in the Augsburg Confession?
I wouldn't say it was considerably. That implies that all the articles of faith were changed. I would say that in the article of how one is converted, which the Formula of Concord talks about under the article of free will, it's Article 2, he did change, and he began to teach. This can be found in his 1535 edition of the Loci Communis, that there has to be something in man that makes God want to elect him. And Missouri Synod actually fought this issue in the predestination controversy in the late 19th century. And the opponents of the Missouri Synod sided with Melanchthon. Missouri Synod sided with Luther in the Augsburg Confession. Basically, the Lutheran Church in the Formula of Concord condemned Melanchthon's position and called it synergism. That is, that we cooperate with God in our own conversion. So that was a very serious error, and his position was condemned by the Formula of Concord.
It's a bit of a sad story to hear someone starting so brilliantly and then ending in disgrace with both sides of the debate. And of course, Philip Melanchthon's life probably should not be measured by how it was ended, not that anyone would want to be judged that way. What would you say is, in your estimation, his greatest contribution to the church?
Well, first off, he has a very important role in helping Luther come to terms with the New Testament at the time of the Reformation itself, in the period 1518 to 1521. There's a good debate whether Luther had the skills necessary himself to figure out what he did. So right there, you would say this was... you know, it was a lifetime achievement, although Luther gets the credit, and rightfully so. And the second thing I would say was his authorship of the Augsburg Confession, which is really the masterpiece of theology of the Lutheran Church. I'd say those two things are his greatest contribution.
I'm wondering, did he make such a contribution to the Reformation that it would not have been what it became without him? I know those are speculative questions, but I'm going to ask it nonetheless.
I don't think it would have been the same. I think there would have still been Lutherans. It may have been that the Lutheran Church would have been divided, like the Hussites were, which goes back to the 14th century. The Hussites were successfully divided by the Roman Catholics into three camps, and by dividing and conquering the Hussites, they eventually eliminated them, the Bohemians, were predominantly Catholic after that time. Melanchthon was always trying to seek concord. He taught this to his students, such as Martin Chemnitz, and that, you know, we have to stick with the main parts of our theology. We can't always get everything perfect. This was one of the things that he had learned from the humanists. So I think that would have been a result if Melanchthon had not been there. The Lutheran Church could have ended up in multiple schisms and not been able to withstand the onslaught of the Roman Catholic Church. So he possibly, that's speculation, he may have contributed that.
Folks, if you appreciate more programs on church history, please consider making a tax-deductible gift to help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. There are only two ways to support Issues Etc. You can donate online, our website address, issuesetc.org. And the other way is by check. You can make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. The address again, LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. And thanks for your support. Dr. Martin Nolan is past director of the Concordia Historical Institute. Dr. Nolan, thank you for being our guest.
Thank you.
All right, more history after the break. We'll talk to Dr. Alvin Schmidt about the faith of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln on this President's Day, Monday, February the 16th. And then we'll begin a series with Greg Kokel on the tactical approach to not only expressing but also contending for your Christian ideas in the public square. That's coming up later on Issues Etc. Do you know what the life of Philip Melanchthon most strongly indicates to me? The life and the work. The desperate need then and now for solid Christian lay people, faithful Christian lay people, and especially faithful Christian lay theologians. Philip Melanchthon was not an ordained clergyman. He was a lay theologian. Oh, how the church needs more of those today. I'm Todd Wilkin. We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.